Recordings have started. Natalie, you may now begin.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the NextGen RDS PDP Working Group call on Wednesday, 22nd of February, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call today, and we will be taking attendance from the Adobe Connect room only. Therefore, if you are connected via the telephone and not able to join the Adobe Connect room, could you please let yourselves be known now?
Lawrence, allow the robots.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. This will be noted. Anyone else on the telephone line only?
I'm sorry, who was that that's on audio only?
That was Lawrence.
Lawrence, allow the robots.
Chuck. Is anyone else bar Lawrence on the phone line only? Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to remind you all to please remember to state your names before speaking so they appear correctly on the transcription. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chuck.
Thank you, and welcome to all of you. Does anyone have an update to your statement of interest? Okay, not hearing or seeing anyone, let's move right on into our agenda. Welcome to all of you for joining us on this call at our alternate time. Appreciate that very much, and glad we can accommodate those that have a quite undesirable time every week, just about. So thanks for bearing with us on that. A pretty good group for our alternate time. We've got 20 people in Adobe right now, plus one not in Adobe, Lawrence. So let's get going. First thing we want to do is finalize the small group to develop questions to discuss with data commissioners in Copenhagen. Now, I'm happy to say that Susan Kawaguchi has agreed to go ahead and coordinate this group, facilitate it in the next few days. And just for the sake of everyone, Susan, would you be willing to describe for the group? I know you're going to send a message out to the group, which is great because some of them aren't on the call right now. But would you describe what the purpose of the group is so that everyone that is aware, and in particular those who may not have been on the call last week?
Sure, Chuck. And I wasn't on the call last week, but between you and Lisa and Marika, you all filled me in a little bit. So it's a small group and people that had volunteered to create questions for the Data Commissioners Cross-Community Panel in Copenhagen. And we're looking for 10 to 15 questions to explore and clarify understanding of the data protection laws in Europe that relate to the issues that we're discussing in the working group. And I went ahead and sent that email out a little bit earlier this evening. So I think there's seven volunteers. And if there's others that want to volunteer, let us know. And hopefully we'll finish our work this Saturday and provide the leadership team with a draft list of questions on Sunday. It's a little bit of a short time frame, but I think it's doable. So.
Thanks, Susan, and this is Chuck again. We will then in the working group call next week then, the working group as a whole will review the questions, which will be sent out in advance. That's why we want to cut off on Saturday, and so that on Monday then the questions, the draft questions can be proposed. And then the working group will be able to discuss those and add to them or modify them or consolidate them, whatever works best. And it doesn't mean we have to close it off at that point if we discover as a working working group a really good question after that, we can, of course, add it. But we want to get this done in advance. In fact, we'll actually have another week after that that probably we can refine it if we need to. Stephanie, I see that you have a question or a comment.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I'm just a little curious about what we're going to do with these questions. I think it's unlikely that the data commissioners are going to be willing to give what amounts to a legal opinion on matters related to the RDS, or at least anything beyond what they've already sent in their various communications to ICANN in the past, and we do have that list. So are we going to give them the questions and say, hey, we'd like answers to these, or what's the plan?
I would like to give them to them in advance. So absolutely. Now, I don't think we can expect them to give official legal opinions without giving them enough time to go back to their legal counsel and do that. But I certainly would hope that they can at least share their opinions, even if it's not official legal opinions. They can always follow up with official legal statements afterwards. But hopefully, because of their expertise, they can give us a pretty good idea of to increase our understanding. So that would be the objective. Now, what are we going to do with the questions besides giving to them in advance and hopefully having opportunity to ask them face-to-face? Now, I don't have any control over what the cross-community session on Monday is going to be, and that's a 90-minute session. I'm hoping that we will be able to give the questions to Becky Burr in advance, and my understanding is that Becky will be facilitating or moderating the panel, and I think there are 6 or 7 people on the panel, including 3 data commissioners from Europe. So we'll certainly, I would love that the questions are asked in that community session. That would be great. I can't guarantee that because I don't have any control over that, but we will give them. Now, we have a follow-up session on Wednesday, a working group session on Wednesday. And keep in mind, we have a working group session on Saturday, which will probably have more of a normal agenda, okay, like we do on these calls. That's what I mean by normal. Continuing our deliberation on the key concepts. On Monday, then there will be the cross-community session where hopefully some of these questions will get asked. And on Wednesday, the plan would be to ask any questions we didn't, we're unable to get into the panel discussion on Monday as a working group. So Monday would be a session for the working group with the data commissioners who are able to stay over until Wednesday. So far, I think I've only heard of one that can do that, but we'll take advantage of that one. And I think there's a possibility that we'll have another expert from Europe. I think, if I remember right, it's from Interpol that works, is a data protection person with Interpol. So if that person is able to come and be there, we'll certainly take advantage of that as well and hopefully be able to ask any questions that didn't get asked on Monday or get clarification on those. Hope that answers your question, Stephanie. So the next thing I want to share are the people who volunteered, and we have a pretty good mix of volunteers. Jabi Bose is with the GAC and the Public Safety Working Group. Victoria Scheckler from the IPC. Natalie Coupe as an individual, Brian Scarpelli from the IPC, Stephanie Perrin from the NCUC, Stephanie Milana from the NCUC, and then Theo Gertz from the Registry Stakeholder Group. So we have both houses, including the two stakeholder groups in the on the non-commercial house represented. So it's pretty good balance. Now, if there's someone else that wants to join, please let us know in right now. Okay. I asked for volunteers last week and had a pretty good response later in the week. So there's been just about a week to for people to volunteer, but we can add one or two more if somebody really wants to do that. But I would rather not have anyone else from the IPC or the NCUC, since we have two each there. And it's not that those two groups aren't really important, but what I'd like to, so that we can keep the group small, because it is a very short time frame, and manageable, any others from the IPC or the NCUC, if you could provide your input to one of those four individuals, that would be much appreciated. And of course, anybody in the working group that wants to suggest a question, and you're not part of one of these groups that have people on there, feel free to send that. And feel free to send it to Susan, okay, or one of the others if you know them well. Whatever works for you. Just so, but do it early enough in the next few days so that the group can consider them and consolidate them, et cetera. Any questions on that group? So Chuck, continuing here, Susan, as she said, has already sent out an email to those people. Is there anyone else that wants to volunteer for that? Please let us know right now. Okay. Thank you very much for that. So let's go to the next agenda item, which is kind of a continuation of where we left off last week, deliberation on the privacy charter question. Now, if you, and hopefully staff is bringing that up in Adobe right now, question 4.1 that we deliberated on last week, we will get to the specific questions there. It's okay to bring up the poll results that were up there. Okay, so let's look at question 4.1 real quick here. And you can see that we didn't really talk about the second question in 4.1. And so we're going to do that a little bit today, depending on how much people want to discuss it. But last week, we focused on the first question: for thin data only, do existing GTLD RDS policies sufficiently address compliance with applicable data protection, privacy, and free speech laws about purpose? If not, the second question then we didn't really talk about last week, if not, what requirements might those laws place on RDS policies regarding purposes associated with thin data? So we're going to, after we look at the poll results, because the poll really focused on the first question and a couple conclusions that we came to in the meeting last week. So we will focus on that second question after we look at the poll results and see if there's some discussion on that. Now, you can see that the poll results are up there. We had a small turnout, and there's probably several reasons for that. Number one, there was a three-day holiday weekend in the U.S. There were other events going on in Iceland with the non-contracted party house and the other things as well. So hopefully we'll get stronger poll participation in the future. But I was not too concerned about the small results in this case because we had a really strong turnout in the working group last week, and there were no objections to the conclusions on the call itself. Now, it's possible that one or two of the no votes we got were from people that were on the call, and that's okay. But I think we had a pretty good sampling from the meeting last week and the poll that we did the end of last week to come to some conclusions that we can record at least on an interim basis. You can see, and we're not going to go through the individuals that participated. You can see them there if you scroll down to the second slide. You'll see the results for the first question. So and it was strong results with a yes answer, agreeing with the conclusions. And the conclusion was, do you agree or disagree with the statement? As a working group, we need to agree upon a purpose statement for the RDS. Okay? And this is in follow-up to the previous 2 weeks where we had Peter and Stephanie share their views of the European data protection requirements. Not that it's restricted to Europe, but certainly they've been pretty well expressed there. And that's why we're following up in Copenhagen with regard to those to make sure we have a good understanding there. So the results were pretty strong in terms of that first conclusion, that we need to agree on a statement of purpose, which you'll recall several weeks ago we started working on. Didn't totally finish it, but we started on that. And so there were 13 yes votes and one no vote, but I think in this one, let me go back and look, I think in this one, that, yeah, there was one person that ended up being recorded in the poll twice. So there were really only 13 total responses and with 12 yes and one no. Now, if you look there at the comments, we're not going to talk about three of the comments because they're kind of just reinforcing the conclusion that we were polling. But I do want to look at the third one. It says it's the person who voted no, and if the notice the comment, because this working group cannot possibly anticipate every possible use case for registration data, and defining it ends up being exclusionary. For example, if not contained within the purpose we define it, it is explicitly not a legitimate purpose. Well, let me share my personal thoughts, and then I'll let others jump in as well. I agree that it's not possible to define every use case. It's not. That's one of the problems of having a very explicit list, is you're bound to leave some out. Now, we've said this before, and I'll repeat it again. We can add purposes if we miss some, okay? And I think this comment is true if that's what we end up with, is a very explicit list of authorized purposes. But if our purposes are a little more broad and general, that's probably not as big a problem. Now, we'll find out when we get into doing it, and we can pursue this further as we actually continue to refine our purpose statement. So that's my assessment of that of comment number three there. Let me open it up to see if anybody else wants to share any thoughts on any of the comments, including number three. Okay, not seeing any hands. And I agree with those in the chat that are saying we've got to be clear. So when I said that we can be a little more general, that's true, but that we still have to be clear. So totally agree with that. Now, so we will then capture this as a rough consensus conclusion that we do need to develop a statement of purpose for the RDS. In the document, you can see that in agenda item. Let me look myself, see which agenda item was that. So that's in 3B. You'll see capture confirmed agreements in the working draft. So that will happen after this meeting. Let's go down then. So if you scroll down to the last page, you'll see the question there. Do you agree or disagree with this statement? Existing GTLD RDS policies do not sufficiently address compliance with applicable data protection, privacy, and free speech laws about purpose. So notice that this is right out of this. Of course, this question is right out of one of the things we had to answer in the charter. And the responses, again, were quite strong, not quite as strong as the previous one. There were two disagrees, okay, and 12 agrees in this one. And I think we had the one duplicate again. So if we had 13 responses, it's 11 to 2. So still, I think, strong enough to, for now at least, to assume that we have rough consensus on that. Keeping in mind that this is not a vote. We'll have to do more formal voting when we get to making final conclusions. But for now, this is a rough protection conclusion. Now, in this particular case, there were a couple comments that I think are probably worthwhile commenting on. And the others are probably just kind of reinforcing the conclusion itself. Comment number three, the person said, I disagree with this statement. ICANN policy should take a hands-off approach on these issues in general. So saying that GTLD policies are insufficient implies that ICANN needs to take a more proactive approach. Again, I'm sharing my personal thoughts here. If ICANN takes a hands-off approach with things that are legally required in some jurisdiction, I'm not sure that's appropriate. I understand that in a lot of cases, especially when it gets into content and so forth, that they really should because of the restrictions of ICANN's mission. But I don't think they can take a hands-off approach when there's laws involved. Now, it's our responsibility as a working group to understand those laws in various jurisdictions as we deliberate on the requirements that we're going to develop. So let me stop with that one and see if anyone else wants to add to that or disagree with me. That's fine. Ollie, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chuck. I absolutely agree with you. The problem with statement number three, you've got a contract that has in it requirements that are enforceable, that are contrary to national laws. So, in fact, taking a hands-off approach means that people bound by the contract are potentially in violation of their national law. So I don't think we can take a hands-off approach.
Well said, Holly. This is Chuck again. That's true. And, of course, just to remind everybody, at the end of this working group, after we get at least and we give recommendations for policy, any consensus policy that we recommend and the board approves, the council first and then the board, of course, would cause changes to those contracts. So I think everybody's aware of that pretty well, but I just want to reemphasize that. Thanks, Holly. Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Stephanie, for the record. I agree with Holly, and I'd just like to say that part of the problem is that ICANN has ignored the fact that it's a data controller by setting the terms of data collection, retention, use, and disclosure in the A, and just basically ignored data protection law. It has taken a hands-off approach, with the result that the registrars are stuck in the crosshairs of any enforcement action. So I do think it's time for a change. I've said that umpteen times. But the Who is Conflicts of Law IRT that we were on, many of us were on a couple of years ago, and which promises to recommence in October, or at least before October, if we don't get a change in policy, I swear I'll go start grading that if we do the same thing we did 2 years ago. So it really is bizarre. We do have to face our responsibilities here as ICANN, as the body of ICANN, as it were.
Thanks, Stephanie. This is Chuck again. I guess we should let a registrar speak now, so I'll let Michaela. Michaela.
Thanks, Chuck. Both of the ladies have pretty much covered everything that I could possibly want to say, but it is worth repeating. Just because something has been a policy for a long time doesn't mean that it hasn't been in conflict with local law. In conversations I've had unofficially off the record, and they won't actually put it in writing, the Irish Data Protection Commissioners have essentially said, okay, we're not going to come after you personally or your company because we know you're stuck in between. But what ICANN is forcing you to do is hugely problematic and isn't compatible. So, yeah, the Irish Data Protection Commission is at least we're conscious of it. But the problem, of course, being that they're not in a position to provide legal advice. So, from the perspective of improving and fixing the policies so that they are more aligned with reality, that would be greatly helpful.
Thanks, Michaela. So, I believe that we have strong enough results between the people that were on the call last week and this poll to accept this as at least an interim rough consensus conclusion that will help us as we go forward. And so we're going to accept the fact that we need that the existing who is does not sufficiently address compliance with applicable data protection, privacy, and free speech laws about purpose. And that's why we're going to proceed to work further on our purpose statement and try and make it better. Andrew, go ahead.
So can you hear me? And is this too noisy in the background?
That sounds pretty good.
All right. Good. I tried to say this in the list earlier today and again in the chat this evening, but the part of the problem that we keep running into is this mention of the existing who is, which is only data access, and it's not actually data collection, right? And I think that the confusion here keeps biting us. We either need to stick to data collection, which is entirely like what are the registry policy rules about what stuff goes into the registry, or what are the data publication rules for what must come out of the registry, or what are the publication rules about what must be in the who is. And those are three different questions. And I think you, Chuck, have been admirable in drawing this line previously, and I've tried very hard to respect it, despite my impatience to get to the access part. And yet, you know, we're back into that same confusion today, I think, with this discussion.
And of course, you're correct. And by the way, I thought your comments that you shared today, and I think I responded to them, that you may have identified another purpose when we get back to that statement, which will start tonight for me anyway. So we'll do that now. And Andrew, part of what you're saying is why I've kind of been focusing on the collection part a little less specifically the last two meetings, because I fully respect the issue there. And once we spend some time refining the purpose, we're going to get into access of thin data first, and then we'll access for thick data as well. Okay, not seeing any other hands. So this second conclusion will be entered into the record as a part of agenda item 3B. Not that we have to do anything here, but staff will take care of that for us. And so we're getting a good little collection of some conclusions as we continue progressing. Agenda item 3C, we want to talk about some of the requirements that laws might place an RDS policy. So we're really going back to that question 4.1, the second question there. What requirements might those laws place on RDS policies regarding purposes associated with thin data? And so if we can bring up the two slides that were prepared by Lisa and Peter, it actually comes from information that Peter shared with us the last couple weeks, and unfortunately he could not join us tonight. He didn't think he could, so we're going to impose on Lisa to go over these two slides and then discuss together that second question. What requirements might the European data privacy laws and other regions that have similar requirements, do those requirements place on RDS policies as we move forward? So, Lisa, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. So, what you see in front of you is actually the slide that Peter began with during our last working group call, where he recapped the key concepts related to purpose that he had introduced the previous week. So you see here on this slide four different points. I'm going to go to slide 2, which actually speaks to each of these four points. In preparing for this meeting, I asked Peter if he would be available to summarize those key concepts again for us to kick off this discussion. And because he wasn't sure he was going to be able to participate at this time, we went ahead and drafted this text that you see in front of you, and Peter reviewed and confirmed that it reflected his view on what he had presented previously. So I'll go over these one by one. The first key concept that we may wish to keep in mind as we look at drafting or relook at drafting a purpose specification for an RDS is that data processing must be proportionate in relation to the legitimate purpose pursued. The second key concept that we may need to keep in mind is that data processing must strike a balance, a fair balance, between both the interests that are concerned and the data subject's rights and freedoms that are at stake. The third point that Peter had brought up, and all this was drawn from that Treaty 108 that he was referring to, the third point is that each party shall provide that data processing can be carried out on the basis of free, specific, informed, and unambiguous consent, and absent that, some other legal basis, legitimate legal basis. The fourth point that Peter raised to us is that personal data undergoing processing shall be processed always in a lawful manner, as well as in a fairly fair and transparent manner. The fifth point that Peter brought out to us from Treaty 108 is composed of 4 points, and all 4 points relate to how personal data might undergo processing. The first point, 5A, is that personal data, if collected, shall be collected for explicit, specific, and legitimate purposes. The second point is that it shouldn't be processed in a way that's incompatible with those specific, specific, explicit, and legitimate purposes. The third point is that that data, personal data, that may be collected for those purposes may be further processed, but only if there is a legitimate aim for further processing, and that all legal requirements for further processing are in fact met. And then the last point was that that data processing, personal data processing, the data that's being processed should be adequate, relevant, and not excessive in relation to the purposes that were defined. So again, this is a recap of the principles that Peter had gone over, gave us some examples last week, and introduced the previous week. And the point of bringing these up again now is to keep these fresh in mind as we take a look at further drafting a purpose specification for an RDS.
Thank you, Lisa. I see that Alex has his hand up. Go ahead, Alex. Are you on mute, Alex? Because we're not hearing you. Looks like you're on mute now, according to the, okay. So your hand went away. So I'm
He's in the chat.
Okay, so you're going to follow up later. Okay, good enough. That's fine, and I hope you will follow up later. Anybody else have a question about these concepts with regard to data processing? And while you're thinking about that, let me repeat something I said last week. The last couple weeks and this week and going into Copenhagen, we're focusing a lot on data privacy, and, which is one of the things that's part of our charter. But for those of you who are concerned about your needs that sometimes may conflict with data privacy, we're going to get there. So please don't assume that we're making any we want to fully understand the data privacy issues and make sure that whatever requirements we come up with address the requirements in various jurisdictions for data privacy, data protection, and privacy. But we're going to get to the point where we're going to look at things. And like I pointed out last week in the document that that Stephanie summarized for us a long time ago, there are rooms for exceptions. Those have to be carefully designed. But one of the exceptions that I pointed out was, you know, rights. And this, if you look at number two here, there has to be a balance between the privacy interest as well as rights and freedoms at stake. So we have to cover all of those to do our job diligently and thoroughly. So please don't assume that we're just going to focus on data privacy. Data protection and privacy are very important, and we have to do that, but we also have to look at rights. So bear with us. We're going to get there, and that's why I hope those of you who are concerned about protecting rights, such as IP rights or law enforcement access and so forth, I hope you will help us generate good questions for dealing with those when we meet with the data commissioners. So, Alex, let's try it again.
Hi, Chuck. Could you hear me now?
Yes, that's great.
Thanks. Yeah, this is Alex. You may have moved past this a little bit, but the question posed was, you know, what requirement data privacy laws place on RDS policies. But it occurs to me, unless I'm not quite understanding, that until we have a defined purpose, we can't really have a useful conversation or debate of that specific question, right? Concepts of proportionality and consent seem to depend on a defined purpose, which, you know, we've discussed in the past but haven't agreed to. So I'm just wondering, are we putting the cart before the horse here, or are we just kind of in the beginning of a process where we will be able to answer this question once we have a purpose? Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Chuck again. And I think you're right. We're going to have to come back to that probably more than one time, and probably even come back to these concepts here once we get further along in terms of a statement of purpose. And then again, as we look at particular data elements and what kind of access, or if there should be access to them, in the future. So, yeah, no disagreement with what you're saying. That particular question happened to be with 4.1, and the first part of 4.1 is probably closer to where we're at right now than the second part, but we thought it's because they go together, we wanted to at least address it. We're not going to finish the second question. In the near term, we're going to have to look at it again as we go forward. Good point. Anybody else? Yes, Lisa.
Chuck, I'm going to continue playing Peter here just for a moment. I think that the point that Peter was trying to get across to all of us was that these key concepts or principles related to how one specifies purpose should be understood and taken into consideration when you define the purpose statement. So while, of course, you then have to step back and look at the purpose statement you come up with and see whether it meets those tests, knowing that this is what you're trying to achieve, for example, that you're trying to achieve a purpose statement that is explicit and proportionate and addresses the issue of consent, addresses the issue of compatibility, will help you craft a purpose specification that in the end might pass pass muster with these requirements.
Thank you, Peter. Much appreciated. You did a good job, Lisa. Thanks. Maxime.
Maxime Alvoba, for the record. Actually, I see that we are talking about collection and access. I suggest we add storage to the items because it might be regulated too. And depending on the regulation of storage, we will see quite different, designs of the system. I understand that it might be an item for later discussion, but we shouldn't forget about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. And yes, we're going to need to keep that in mind. Absolutely. It's really, on the one hand, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves on these things. On the other hand, you almost have to at least bring things up like you just did to look at the bigger picture, even though we won't talk about storage right now in detail. But thanks for bringing that up. Okay. All right. Let's then, if there are no more comments on this, Lisa and Marika and McKaylee, who were all on our leadership call with me yesterday. I'm blank on agenda item 3D. Is there something, have we already done that, or is there something else we need to do on 3D, which is to test any possible agreements on this in the in a poll, or is that just a step as we move forward? Lisa, go ahead.
Chuck, I think what we had in mind was if the working group agrees that these are key concepts that should be considered as we move forward with a purpose specification, then we would test that agreement in a poll. I'm not sure that we're at that point, but that was the thinking of 3D.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, that helps me. So, I'm not sure we're ready for a poll on this, but what do others think? Does somebody think we need to do a poll on this? I think later on, as we get into more specifics and purpose and even in data elements and so forth, and we may have some very specific things to pull. This is pretty broad and covers a lot of territory right now, so I don't think it lends itself to some easy poll questions for people to respond to. And we're trying to keep the polls relatively short so it doesn't take very much time for people to do them. And thanks for your comment, Alex. And I see Lisa is time. Certainly, if somebody thinks that there's a poll question we could ask about this that would be useful and easy for people to respond to, I'm not opposed to that. But I don't think we're there yet on this issue. Okay. A couple of people typing. I'll just pause for a few seconds and see what comes up. I'm not seeing anything real quickly, so I think I'll go ahead and move to agenda item 4. Let me see, Maxim, you're saying, are you suggesting that we add a response? I did not understand the question to the polls. If so, we could do that. I think probably that could be handled in the comments without adding a third option. So certainly feel free to put that in the comments that you didn't understand the question. I hope people that are on the calls before we do a poll have a pretty good understanding of it, because we always give room for objections and questions and so forth. And I hope that those that aren't on the calls that led to a poll would listen to the recording and look at the transcripts and so forth to get that. And also, please feel free to ask on the list. If you don't understand a question, please ask on the list so that some of us can respond to that. Okay. Item 4. We're going to return to our deliberation. It's been probably a couple months. I don't know the exact time frame because I didn't go back and look it up. Since we were talking about an overarching purpose for collecting, maintaining, and providing access to registration thin data, and we didn't really focus so much on access for a while, more on collection, realizing that you're probably not going to collect them unless you're going to do something with it, unless it's going to be used. You can see on the screen now is our meeting handout for today that was distributed in the last couple days, I guess yesterday, to the whole working group, or at least it was on the website. So you have it in front of you. Now, this is a pretty wordy document and covers several pages. So we're not going to go through it in full detail, You certainly can do that on your own, and some of you probably already have. But what I wanted to do, first of all, is just take a look at, and keep in mind, this is something we put together quite a few weeks ago now, and when we started talking about the purpose of an RDS. And you can see the goals that we came up with this list. Consistency with ICANN's mission, consistency with other consensus policies that pertain to generic top-level domains, to provide a framework that enables compliance with applicable laws, to help articulate a rationale for a potential RDS, to communicate purposes of the RDS to registrants and others, and to establish sufficient relationship between the purposes and the uses of the RDS. Some of these we spent quite a bit of time wordsmithing several weeks ago, but those were the goals that we came up with. And then we actually listed some specific purposes for registration data and registration directory services. Again, there are a total of, five, okay. A purpose of GTLD registration data is to provide information about the life cycle of a domain name. And as some of you recall, we talked about that life cycle of a domain name for quite a while ago. Second one, a purpose of RDS is to provide an authoritative source of information about, for example, domain contacts, domain names, and name servers for GTLDs. And we added the parenthetical based on approved policy so that people understand that we will eventually make some policy recommendations. And so we're not just saying that everybody's going to get access to those things, but based on approved policy, it would be an authoritative source of information. Three, a purpose of RDS is to identify domain contacts and facilitate communication with domain contacts associated with generic top-level domains. And again, based on approved policy, which, of course, we haven't even made any recommendations there yet. Four, a purpose of GTLD registration data is to provide a record of domain name registrations. Five, a purpose of RDS policy is to promote the accuracy of GTLD registration data. So those are the things we came up with, keeping in mind that we didn't finalize any of this yet. Now, we may come up with some poll questions for these in the coming week, but we'll see how the ongoing discussion of this goes today. What we're going to do next, but before we do that, I'll certainly entertain any questions or comments on the goals and purposes, although we don't want to redo the exercise we went through on to come up with these before. And then we'll have Lisa highlight some things in the rest of the document that are particularly relevant to our task of continuing to refine the purpose statement. Anybody have a comment or question at this stage? I didn't comment. I realized I didn't comment on the fourth comment on the second question in our poll that registration agreement with ICANN, that it requires them to state a purpose, the purposes of the data that they're going to use the data for. And that is true if you go back and look at the RAA, but it's not really a purpose for the RDS. It's a purpose that registrars state, as I understand it, for the data that they collect from registrants. So whereas that comment was true, it isn't really true with regard to a purpose for an RDS. There's not one common purpose for an RDS, if in fact we have one. So And let me turn it over to Stephanie. Are you on mute, Stephanie? We're not hearing anything. Okay, not sure what's going on there because we heard Stephanie fine earlier in the call. So is Stephanie being muted? Hey, see the in the chat. It looks like you're muted now. Try.
Hello?
There
can
we
you
go.
Hear me now?
Yes.
Ah, wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Stephanie Perrin for the record. Now, if I could remember what I was going to say, I just wanted to sort of emit a note of caution that when we look at statements for the Your ID for the Who Is Lookup facility, that is a pretty, I would say, harsh statement based on the current configuration of how we do Who Is. And if we're actually thinking of purposes, it's at a meta level, and we should not pollute it when we're trying to think of what our purpose is with the existing tools that we have, because we already know that the Who Is, current Who Is Lookup facility is broken. So, for instance, it says here that a person has to agree to certain personal information being available in the directory. Well, that may not actually be the case with the new system.
Where does it say that, Stephanie?
Point that out. It says by going to when a domain name is registered, the information relating to the blah 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 blah, Who Is database in compliance with the rules set out below, the information collected, and the person, here we are, when registering a domain name, the registrant is required to accept the registry's terms and conditions, which authorizes the registry to make some personal data accessible on its website.
So you're going ahead in the document.
I think
probably one of the annexes. Is that where you are?
I'm in the 4th paragraph of section 2.1.
Okay, just a second.
And I just think it's a bit misleading.
Well,
I'm on page 6 of 7 here.
Okay, let me get over there. 6 of 7. Oh, okay. Oh, so that's
the Who Is Lookup facility.
Well, let's hold off on that because the only reason I'm saying that because we're going to have Lisa go over some things here that she's highlighted in yellow in these sections. And they're largely, and correct me if I'm saying this wrong, Lisa, but they're largely background information in terms of, as you can see, ICANN's mission and some RAA requirements now and registry agreement requirements now. And they're elements that relate to our discussion. It does not mean that we're going to establish them as requirements in our recommendations or policies in our recommendations. So this is more background information than it is suggesting that these things continue the way they are. Okay? So why don't we just go then to Lisa and let her kind of just share some things that she highlighted in yellow, because they relate to what we're talking about. And Lisa, you may be able to describe the purpose of showing these things better than I just did. So please go ahead, Lisa.
Thanks, Chuck. And this is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. So
as we started thinking about the draft statement of purpose that Chuck just read through here on page 2 of the handout, and the working groups need to take a look at this draft statement of purpose and think about how it does or doesn't apply the key concepts that, Peter introduced. One of the things that struck us first was underneath the goals for each RDS purpose, the first item is consistency with ICANN's mission. So that led us to think, well, we should put in front of you what is ICANN's mission.
Yeah.
And many of you are all too familiar with this, but some of you are not. So starting here, any purpose specification should at least be consistent with the organization's mission and derive from it. This is ICANN's mission as amended last October. And note that the mission is still, of course, overall to ensure the stable and secure operation of the Internet's unique identifier systems. That includes the DNS. So that that aspect of the mission hasn't necessarily changed in the update from last October. However, if we go to the third paragraph here, it talks about policies in the areas described in annexes G1 and G2. So we'll drill into those, but those are policies for which uniform or coordinated resolution is reasonably necessary to facilitate the openness, interoperability, resilience, security, and or stability of the DNS. So that sort of sets the scope, if you will, for the mission that the purpose of the RDS should be designed to support. More specifically, if we look at annexes G1 and G2, they have some striking similarity. That's because G1 pertains to registrars, that is, topics, issues, policies, processes that apply to registrars, and Annex G2 does the same thing, covers topics, issues, policies, and processes that apply to registries. But in both cases, you see that it pertains to issues for which that uniform and or coordinated resolution is reasonably necessary to facilitate interoperability, security, and or stability of the Internet, registrar services, registry services, or the DNS. So again, that derives from the top-level mission statement. And if you see, as an example, towards the bottom of page 3 here, top of page 4, there's an example that talks about reserving registered names in a TLD that may either be registered initially or renewed, but are not renewed, in order to avoid confusion among or misleading of users, intellectual property, or the technical management of the DNS or the Internet. So that gives us another hint about what might be considered in scope for the mission. Also here is maintenance of and access to accurate and up-to-date information concerning registered names and name servers. So this is, pertains directly to the registration data that we've been talking about and potentially the purpose of the RDS. An example under Annex G2 is, again, avoiding confusion among or misleading of users, intellectual property, and the technical management of the DNS or the Internet, as well as maintenance of and access to accurate and up-to-date information concerning, in this case, domain name registrations. So any purpose specification that this working group might come up with and that should derive from ICANN's mission should, in fact, at least be consistent with these statements that are in the much longer mission statement that we've pulled out here.
And let me add a little qualification there, Lisa. It happens sometimes that policy recommendations from PDP working groups that are approved by the board require changes to ICANN's bylaws. Now, that's not our goal going in, but if that happens, that is a possibility. I'm not saying that these should be changed. I just want to point out to people that when policies are approved that conflict with ICANN's mission as stated in the bylaws, then that would be noted by the working group with their recommendations so that any possible changes to ICANN's mission would be considered and worked on. In fact, all of us know that happened with regard to the IANA transition recommendations. There were significant changes made in the bylaws. Now, usually with GNSO PDP working groups, they're not that significant, but that is a possibility. I'm not saying that should happen or that it will happen or won't happen, but keep in mind that that is a possibility. Holly, go ahead.
Yep. Just a question for Lisa. I first of all, thank you for pointing this out. There's a lot of useful phraseology there, which in a sense broadens the concept of management of the DNS, which is the mission statement. Could you explain why intellectual property is a component of that? I'm not sure why. Is that about cyber squatting? Is it about, why is intellectual property an element in managing of the DNS? Thank you.
This is Lisa. I'll respond to you, Holly. That is an example listed there, and it pertains to reservation of registered names. Names that may not be registered initially or might not be renewed because of reasons of intellectual property protection. So it's specifically related to avoiding, I think, cyber squatting or registering potentially confusing names, if you also see the part of the example that refers to that.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Lisa on the portions of these sections that she shared? Okay. And then let's I better check my agenda to make sure I do this right. The next thing in this document on page 7, in fact, let's take a look at that. Now we're not put. This is an example of this is a an example from the .eu ccTLD in terms of their purpose statement. Now it includes more than just their purpose statement, Let's take a look at that. And Marika, I think you're the one that identified this one. Do you want to highlight the just go over the purpose statement here for us?
Sure. This is Marika. So I think you saw in recent meetings where we've actually looked at a couple of examples that we drew from ccTLDs, noting, of course, that they're subject to European data legislation. So we thought that there might be some value in looking how Dave dealt with this question of defining purpose. So the one you see on the screen is available for the .eu registry, which basically says that the purpose of the WHOIS database as set forth in the first paragraph of Article 16 of the Commission regulation, is to provide reasonable, accurate, and up-to-date information about the technical and administrative points of contact administering the domain names. If the registry is holding false, incorrect, or outdated information, the registrant will not be contactable and may lose the name. By deliberately submitting inaccurate information, the registrant would also be in breach of the terms and conditions, which could also lead to loss of the domain name.
Thanks, Marika. And the second paragraph is less of a definition of the purpose as it is consequences that may happen for registrants. But that first paragraph is, I think, essentially, and somebody from that works with .eu more directly than I do can certainly jump in on this, but that's their first purpose statement. Now, we're not putting this forth as an example that is a good one or a bad one or whatever. We thought it would be helpful, like Marika said, to look at some examples of ccTLDs from Europe. And we looked at others, too. Some of them are more explicit than others. Some of them are kind of vague. It's not for us, I guess, to tell whether they're good or not. They still exist, so I guess they haven't been challenged, or at least not to the extent that they've been changed. But it's an example in today's world of a purpose statement. So we wanted to share that just to give something concrete of a purpose statement. Now, will ours be that short? I doubt it. We've already got more than that, although we haven't finalized it in terms of work, you know, at least rough consensus of the working group. Any questions or comments on this example? Okay. So let's go back. This is still Chuck speaking. Let's go back to that first page where I went over the, it's not the first page of this document. It's the second, it's page two, okay, where we looked at the goals of each RDS purpose and the specific purposes for registration data and registration directory services. Are there any of those goals, and this is kind of repeating a little bit what we did a long time ago, but let's bring it up to date. Are there any of the goals that anyone questions as being valid goals for the purposes that we come up with? And let me start with number one. Anybody disagree that the goals for our purposes should be consistent with ICANN's mission? That's probably a really easy one. So we probably could have whether we do separate poll questions on these depends on how they come out. What about number two? Consistency with other consensus policies that pertain to gTLDs. Anybody disagree with that goal? Okay. I better look at the chat, too. So, okay, that's about the EU statement, okay? Number three, to provide a framework that enables compliance with applicable laws. Is that a legitimate purpose? Stephanie, I see an X. Was that for number two?
Yes, that was for number two. Depends on how you define a consensus policy. Sorry, this is Stephanie Perrin for the record. I'm just concerned that some of these picks that are developing within some of the new gTLDs, we wouldn't necessarily want to agree with them. Thanks.
So Stephanie, let me try and help out there. The picks, and anyone's welcome to correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, the picks were not consensus policies. Go ahead.
The problem is that the PICs appear to be morphing into best practices that are being replicated in other areas, almost a replacement for consensus policies. That's what I'm concerned about.
And that's a legitimate
policy,
concern.
Yeah.
This says consensus policies, which means policies that for gTLDs, they're policies that are developed using our bottom-up process in the GNSO and are recommended by a PDP working group and been approved by the GNSO Council, sent to the board, and approved by the board. So with that understanding, would you disagree with this purpose? So you would. So that's okay, as long as we have that understanding. Okay, thank you, Stephanie. McKaylee, you jump in, please.
It's okay, actually. You covered us.
Okay, thanks. Okay. And it's, Stephanie, your question is really important because you're absolutely right that some things that are implementing policy in the case of the new GTLD policy from the first round, you know, they're confused with actual consensus policies. Now, the overall recommendations of the new GTLD PDP working group back in, 2006, 2007, whenever that happened, was a consensus policy, but it didn't have a lot of detail. There were a lot of things left for implementation, and so that's where we get that point of confusion. Okay, McKaylee, did you want to add something else?
Just very, very briefly, McKaylee, for the record, I think one of the things that it might be helpful to kind of remind people about at some point would be to kind of go back to basics and explain the difference between contractual agreements, consensus policy, how consensus policy is binding on contracted parties, and then these kind of weird sidebar type things that aren't really either, but yet end up being kind of binding, which I think some of us are still having problems wrapping our heads around. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela. This is Chuck again. And it is easy. There is a lot of confusion there. Note, though, in follow-up kind of to what Michaela's saying, and then I'll go to Marika, that we don't have a goal that is consistency with existing contracts. That wouldn't work, would it? Because some of our recommendations may change the elements of contracts. So, okay, Marika, go ahead, please.
This is Marika. I just wanted to point out the suggestion I made in the chat to avoid any confusion, as pointed out by Stephanie. Maybe it's helpful to either put quotation marks around consensus policies and even add to it as defined in the agreements that ICANN has with GTLD registries and ICANN accredited registrars to really make sure that people understand that this is a defined term and not necessarily, you know, a policy that may have obtained consensus from the community, which is a different thing.
Yeah, let's make that change. We don't have to do it right now, but let's make that in any conclusions that come out of this. And you could put it in caps too, capital C and capital P. But whatever way we do it, that's a good suggestion. Alex, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah, I just on the topic of PICs, you know, for those of us who followed closely the transition and the accountability discussions and debate that happened, I just wanted to remind people that the PICs are explicitly grandfathered to the scope and mission of ICANN. So I think it's important to keep that in mind too as we have these discussions.
Yeah, and thanks. That's fine. That still doesn't make them consensus policies, which is what we're talking about here. But good point.
Agreed.
Okay. Thanks, Alex. Mark.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Mark for the record. So I guess I'm looking, giving this another look, and does, you know, a goal for each RDS purpose consistency with other consensus policies that pertain to generic top-level domains. Do I take that correctly to mean, you know, if we agree that that's a goal, then revisiting or changing any previous consensus policies is off limits? In other words, you know, we can change contracts, but we can't change previous consensus policies. Do I have that correct?
I don't think we can take it that far, Mark. It's a really good point that you raise, but consensus policies to be changed obviously need because it was done through a PDP and so forth, it wouldn't be probably as easy as changing a contractual term. But we shouldn't think that consensus policies can't change, because they can. In fact, they're typically supposed to be reviewed every so often, because we discover things that we missed or maybe circumstances have changed and so forth. So I wouldn't go that far to say, by being consistent, certainly the goal is for them to be consistent, but if we find something in a PDP that doesn't apply anymore, or that we need to make a recommendation that would change that, that can happen. It can still happen, but our goal is to be consistent with those to the extent feasible. Does that make sense, Mark?
Well, your explanation does. Absolutely, and I agree with what you just said, but I guess I'm just not getting that from the bullet point.
How would you change the wording? Sorry to put you on the spot, but you know.
Sorry, I'm not that nimble.
So we may want to think about. You can think about that, and if you come up with a better wording, I think we kind of have to assume that kind of thing. I mean, literally, it's possible eventually for ICANN's mission to change in some respects. I'm not saying it will or it should, but if we as a community agreed and the board supported some modification to the mission, it could change. But to the extent that it doesn't change, we want to be consistent with that. So I think that what you're getting at, you know, we don't need to be so dogmatic that nothing, we have to be so consistent that it locks us in, because we're in a very dynamic environment. Michele.
Thanks, Jeff. Michele, for the record. I suppose the problem here is with this thing about other consensus policies. I mean, we're kind of getting into real kind of pure ICANN-esque weeds here. So you can't change a consensus policy unilaterally, but I suppose the thing is that what I think we need to be clear about is that we aren't restricted by the existing policy. They're two different things. So you can't go along and unilaterally say, okay, well, that policy that came out of a consensus process, we're going to completely change it and ignore it. But at the same time, if we restrict ourselves to being compliant or restricted by or within the parameters of existing policy, then we might as well all just go home.
True.
Yeah, thanks. And you said in a different way what I was trying to communicate, so I appreciate that. Thank you, Michele. Stephanie.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I can't really match Michele's eloquence there. That was my conclusion, that if we're not here to change some policies, then we might as well all go home. And we do seem to be in a continuous loop, because the policy that is behind the conflicts with law IRT has been punted to us. And quite frankly, I get the feeling that maybe the thick who is has been punted over, because if it's not in compliance with data protection law, we have a rather large problem on our hands. So I don't know how you word this so that it doesn't sound like, on the one hand, on the other hand, you know, and we go in circles. That's a challenge. Thank you.
Yes, it is, and people are bringing up good points. I'm not sure we'll ever get the wording perfect, but if people have suggestions for better wording on any of these, please provide them. They're very welcome. You don't have to do it right now, but on our list, if you come up with some ways to make it better, that would be great. Now, we're coming up to the end of our time, and I think we've covered the first three goals. There didn't seem to be any objections to those except for Stephanie's, and I think we've clarified that. Keeping in mind that we're going to have time to come back to a lot of these things later, so things aren't in concrete in the decisions we're making now. But it seems to me that we have good agreement on this call on the first three goals, realizing that the wording may not be perfect, okay? But hopefully we've at least clarified that in our discussion. So is there anybody that disagrees with the fact that the statement of the first three goals for each RDS purpose? Just put a red X in the, and if you want to talk to it, you're, of course, welcome to talk to it, too. Okay. All right. Not seeing any objections. So I think we can do, it's probably better to keep them simple and straightforward, is to do three poll questions to confirm that those conclusions for the first three goals, and also to give people who are not on this call a chance to weigh in. Now, hopefully they will listen to our discussion, because this is a case where I think our discussion is going to be really important for those. So we'll really encourage people to listen to the discussion at certainly the last part of our meeting when we talk about these. So those will be the poll questions. Again, all of you, even though you're on the call, are encouraged to respond to the poll. It should be really easy and fast for you. So don't think just because you're on the call that you shouldn't respond. We would really like you to. And, of course, we want people to respond that aren't on the call, so we give them a chance to provide input as well. All right, so the action items, then, we'll do a poll. Hopefully that'll come out later today for those that are still are already in Wednesday, which is most of you. There are a half a dozen of us or so who are still on Tuesday. That'll be an action item. There's an action item for the small group. Thanks for the volunteer. Some of you aren't on the call, but Susan will be getting you all going. And keep in mind that if you want to provide possible questions, you don't have to be on the group. Send them to the group so that they can massage them and combine them if they're similar and things like that to make it easier then next week when we try and work towards finalizing a list of questions for the data protection commissioners in Copenhagen. So please, that's an action item for everybody if you have questions. And again, if there's we've got a group of, I think it was seven people plus Susan, but everybody's willing to contribute to that, and we will all have the ability to contribute to that in our call next week and in the days following, a few days following that. Let's see. I think we've covered. Are there any other action items that I missed capturing or reviewing? Our next meeting date will be Tuesday the 28th, which will be at our normal time, 1700 UTC. We will have one more meeting, I think, after that, before we get to Copenhagen. So I think on the 7th, March 7th, is our last meeting before Copenhagen. Any questions, comments? Is there anything I've missed? Okay. A little more progress. Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of the day, regardless of what day it is for you. Some of us only have about a half hour left of our day, and hopefully we can get some sleep. So thanks, everybody. Good meeting. And one more thing. I see Jim's goodbye. Jim Galvin, am I correct that you're on the panel for the cross-community session with the commissioners?
Thanks, Chuck. Just Jim Galvin for the record. I think so, Chuck. I was asked. I presented a position, and I, frankly, I'm not sure that I'm feeling like there was an acknowledgement and commitment, but I think so.
Well, the reason I bring it up, Jim, and I should have done it earlier, but I just want to give you a warning. We'll probably ask you to try and get some of our questions in if that needs to be done, since you're a representative of the GNSO on that panel. Anyway, feel free to talk to me about that. I'm obviously not leading that. I don't have any direct influence in that. But just a warning, that would be nice if you can represent us as a working group to get some of those questions in if they're not put in otherwise. So just nothing we need to do right now. I just wanted to confirm that you're aware of that, like I have been made aware. So thanks, everybody. Sorry for going just a little bit over. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks, and I'm sorry to bring us even further over, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I just wanted to point out that if we are planning on asking the data commissioners detailed questions, they won't be able to help us much unless we provide a detailed briefing note on ICANN. None of them have staff follow ICANN, so somebody has to brief them on what's going on. And I've talked to enough of them to know that they are not familiar with, for instance, the whole thick who is migration. That's the kind of thing. Don't expect answers to skill testing questions if we don't brief them on this stuff first.
And I think, Stephanie, that it's a good suggestion, but I think if we're careful in how we word the questions too, they may be less dependent in understanding ICANN and more dependent on their expertise. But let's keep that in mind, not only to try and do it to the extent that we think it's helpful, but to be careful how we word the questions so they don't rely so much on understanding ICANN as them understanding the data protection requirements in Europe. But good point. We need to keep that in mind. Thank you. And again, sorry for going over. Let's go ahead and notice the Marika's comment in terms of briefings. We probably want to call attention to some of those briefings to the data commissioners. That's one way we can attempt to accomplish what Stephanie's suggestion. So thanks, everybody. Meeting adjourned. The recording can stop.